Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine a treatment that could cure blindness from age-related macular degeneration. It's one of the most common causes of vision loss, and this isn't, you know, science fiction anymore.
Not at all. It's the promise of human pluripotent stem cells dash HPSCs. The idea is you can turn them into the eye cells you need, these retinal pigment epithelium or RPE cells, and then transplant them.
It sounds revolutionary. And it is. I see there are over 100 clinical trials already happening.
It's a huge area of regenerative medicine, but there's this massive safety cloud that's always been hanging over it. HPSCs are just inherently unstable. They're notorious for picking up genomic abnormalities.
Right. Things like gaining or losing whole chromosomes.
Yeah.
Aneuploidy.
Exactly. And these changes can look distressingly similar to the very first steps of cancer development. The industry has sort of relied on this assumption that the process of differentiation, you know, forcing the stem cell to become an RPE cell, acts as a natural filter.
A purifying bottleneck.
That's the term. The thinking is simple. The abnormal cells are unstable, and the stress of becoming a specialized cell should just, well, kill them off.
Leaving you with only the healthy cells for the final therapy.
But what if one really common mutation has figured out a way to not only survive that filter, but to actually use the healthy cells around it to get through?
So an error that starts out incredibly rare somehow takes over and ends up dominating the whole population.
Precisely. So for our deep dives today, we're going to unpack exactly how a specific chromosomal gain, this gain of chromosome arm 1Q, bypasses that critical quality control step. It's the story of some very unexpected and frankly risky cellular teamwork.
Before we get into all the mechanics, we should definitely give a shout out to the research team.
Yes, absolutely.
We're celebrating the work of Edouard Couvreau de Deckersberg, Yingyan Lei, and their colleagues. The lab was led by Claudia Spitz at the Vrije Universiteit Brussels. Their work has really advanced our understanding of this whole instability problem.
They've shined a much-needed spotlight on a major vulnerability in the field, that's for sure.
Okay, so let's set the stage. This genomic instability in stem cells, it's not a rare thing, right?
No, it's pervasive. It happens all the time. When you culture these cells for long periods, they just start acquiring these abnormalities. The most common ones are gains in chromosomes 1, 12, 17, and 20.
And the really tricky part is that it exists as low-grade mosaicism. So you could have a culture that looks perfectly healthy on a standard genetic screen, but if you look closer, maybe 3 to 6% of the cells are actually carrying one of these errors.
And that's the problem. Standard methods, things like G-banding, they're just not sensitive enough. They're designed to find big problems in big populations, not these tiny hidden ones.
So if you use a batch of cells with, say, 5% abnormal cells, what's the risk?
Well, at best, the therapy just doesn't work as well. But the worst case scenario is that you've transplanted cells that have a first hit towards becoming cancerous years down the line.
A ticking time bomb, basically, in a patient's eye.
It's a huge liability. Now, we already knew some of these aneuploidies give the cells an advantage before differentiation. Gain of chromosome 12, for instance, just makes them go faster.
Simple proliferation.
And a gain on chromosome 20, specifically the 20q11.21 region, makes cells less sensitive to programmed cell death, apoptosis.
So they're tougher, they're survivors.
Right.
But can they survive becoming an RPE cell?
That's the key question. And we know some can't. There's another error. Isochromosome 20Q, and those cells almost always get eliminated during differentiation. They just fail.
So the study's central idea was that while some of these errors are a dead end, maybe others actually get a competitive boost during the differentiation process itself.
Exactly. And that they might even become enriched in the final product. Using RPE differentiation as the model was perfect because the clinical stakes are so high.
Okay, let's get into the methodology. This sounds like it required some serious detective work to track these tiny populations.
It did. They started with a fairly standard, unguided RPE differentiation protocol. It's a long one, 4 to 8 weeks.
And then they have to purify the cells.
Right. They manually pick out the pigmented RPE colonies. The whole process is their experimental bottleneck. And they confirmed it was a very stringent one, leading to mostly clonal colonies.
Meaning one cell survives and expands to create a whole cluster.
The very definition of selection. So to get that before picture, to see the low-grade mosaicism, they needed something with really high resolution.
Which brought them to single-cell DNA sequencing.
Mm-hmm. scDNA-seq. They analyzed over 1,600 individual cells at the very beginning. And they saw exactly what they expected. The trisomy 12s, the ISO 20 Qs, all the usual suspects.
So they confirmed the problem was there from the start.
Pervasive, yes. But here's where it gets interesting. To get the after picture of the final RPE cells, they couldn't just use the same method again.
Oh, why switch methods? What was the limitation that forced them to look at RNA to solve a DNA problem?
That's a great question. Once RPE cells are fully differentiated, they often stop dividing. And getting high-quality genomic DNA out of them is really challenging. So they pivoted. They used single-cell RNA sequencing and a clever computational tool called Infer-CNV.
Ah, I see. So Infer-CNV can infer large DNA copy number changes just by looking at the gene expression levels if a whole chromosome arm is duplicated.
You see a corresponding jump in the RNA expression from all the genes on that arm. It's an elegant workaround. And I let them analyze a huge number of cells at the end, over 87,000.
But the really clever part was the co-culture experiment.
That was the heart of it. They took their aneuploid lines, the 1Q gain, but also the known failures like ISO 20Q, and they differentiated them either alone or mixed in with healthy wild-type cells.
And they tracked them by making the 1Q gain cells fluorescent.
Right. They started them at this incredibly low frequency, less than 0.5%, and then they just watched what happened over the weeks with live imaging.
And this is where the results really start to hit home.
They do. First, they confirmed the basics. The differentiation bottleneck is ruthless. Almost all the other aneuploidies they tested, gain of 20Q, ISO 20Q, gain of 17Q, they were either eliminated or they just failed to become proper RPE cells.
But not the 1Q gain.
Not at all. It was the complete opposite. The InfraCNV analysis of the final purified RPE product showed that the only major genetic imbalance left was the gain of chromosome arm 1Q.
And the numbers?
Shocking. In one cell line, the 1Q gain cells made up nearly 43% of the final population.
43% from a starting point that was barely detectable. What does that mean for how these therapies are being made right now?
It means that if you're not using these ultra-sensitive screening methods before you start, you could be making a product that is overwhelmingly abnormal, even if it looks okay under a microscope.
And the key was that they needed the healthy cells to do it.
That's the kicker. They only pulled this off when they were co-cultured. When they were grown alone, they failed.
So the abnormal cells are, they're parasitic. They're depending on the healthy cells to do the hard work for them.
That's exactly it. It's a perfect example of cellular rescue. The live imaging confirmed it. Those fluorescent 1Q gain cells just exploded, expanding 45 to 124 fold. They were completely outcompeting their healthy neighbors.
They get rescued and then they take over.
They get rescued and then they thrive.
So let's break down that rescue mechanism. What were the healthy cells giving them in those first few critical days?
Well, they looked at the cell-to-cell signaling. The aneuploid cells that failed, like the ones with trisomy 20, were just transcriptionally stubborn. They kept expressing pluripotency signals like FGF2. They were basically deaf to the instructions to differentiate.
They refused to grow up.
Exactly. But the 1Q gain cells were different. Their receptors were ready and waiting for these subtle neuroectodermal signals coming from the wild-type cells around them.
Like little chemical cues.
Precisely. They identified interactions like NRXN1, NLGN1. Those signals were just enough to push the 1Q gain cells onto the right path toward becoming RPE. The healthy cells were giving them the map.
So they get the map from their neighbors, but then they unleash some kind of built-in superiority. What's their secret weapon for survival?
They have a biological cheat code. It's strongly linked to a single gene called MDM4, which is located right in that gained region on chromosome 1Q.
MDM4, that's a key regulator of the P53 tumor suppressor.
Got it. So having an extra copy of 1Q means you have more MDM4 protein. And MDM4 is a powerful inhibitor in P53.
And P53 is the cell's emergency brake. It triggers cell death in response to stress or DNA damage.
Right. And differentiation is a very stressful process. So while the normal healthy cells are dealing with that stress and maybe triggering P53 to self-destruct,
the 1Q gain cells have muted that alarm system. They just sail right through.
They sail right through and take over the whole culture. But they're not entirely unscathed. When they looked at the gene expression of these 1Q RPE cells, they saw clear signs of strip.
So even though they look right, internally they're, what, fighting to hold it together?
Yes. They had upregulated pathways for things like DNA repair and unfolded protein response. They're surviving, but they are under constant internal pressure, all enabled by that MDM4 bypass.
So the big takeaway here is that this low-grade mosaicism isn't harmless at all. It can be actively selected for, creating a final product that's dominated by aneuploid cells.
It's a massive vulnerability. And it's important to note, this seems pretty specific to 1Q gain for creating functional RPE. Other aneuploidies that expanded, like the 20Q gain, mostly just created junk cells that would be filtered out anyway.
The 1Q gain is the one that pulls off the complete escape act.
It is. Now, we do have to mention the limitations. They use a spontaneous differentiation protocol. Most clinical-grade manufacturing today uses more directed protocols with specific growth factors.
Which might change the outcome.
It might. It needs more research. And, of course, the other huge question is long-term safety. They didn't test whether these 1Q gain RPE cells could form tumors after being transplanted in an animal.
So the risk is still theoretical, but the mechanism is like, well, it's undeniably oncogenic.
To boil it all down, RPE differentiation is this ruthless filter. But cells with the 1Q gain are uniquely prepared to beat it. They get rescued by signals from their healthy neighbors, which gets them on the right path. Then they unleash their survival advantage, this MDM4P4P53 bypass, and just dominate the entire culture.
Which leaves us with a really provocative thought. We know these 1Q RPE cells look the part. They are transcriptionally similar to healthy RPE cells, but we also know they are riddled with internal stress and have a broken P53 pathway, a pathway that's meant to protect us from cancer. So considering these cells are supposed to last for decades in a person's eye, what does that inherent stress mean for their long-term function and, more importantly, their long-term safety? That's a question the field needs to answer, and fast. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Under glass are born. Most are honest maps, drawn thin and true. Some hide an extra street that shouldn't run through. When the lights go low and the signals change, we cross a narrow threshold like a guarded gate. And the ones that carry too much weight let go, falling out of there's a whisper in the medium, a tide in the air, a gentle pull that says keep going, don't stay there. A neighbor's pulse, a borrowed cue, a quiet rescue, turning wrong into through. I was the outlier in the margins of the plan, an extra arm reaching where it never could stand. Then the room sang soft and I caught the tone, learned to take the light and make it my own. At the bottleneck ghosts disappear, but I held on, I held on here, with a stranger's signal under my skin. I learned to see, and I learned to win. Cobblestone patterns tied in a line, a mosaic of chances in a borderline mind. Some cells cling to yesterday, looping the same refrain. Some won't hear the cue when the chorus calls their name, but I'm tuned to the faintest distant call, a parable in echoes on the culture wall, where pigment gathers like midnight ink. I step into the future faster than you think. There's a handoff in the silence, a code without words, a message carried softly like migrating birds. Not force, not flame, just a steady stream, and suddenly the barrier opens like a seam. I was the outlier in the margins of the plan, an extra arm reaching where it never could stand. Then the room sang soft and I caught the tone, learned to take the light and make it my own. At the bottleneck disappear, but I held on, I held on here, with a stranger's signal under my skin. I learned to see, and I learned to win. Count the quiet fractures you never saw, low-grade storms behind the perfect law. What looks like balance can hide a sway. One message and the room will obey. So listen for the subtle bell in the rain. Watch who learns the chorus, who stays the same.